First to what we do and don't yet know about the Lion Air crash off Jakarta on October the 29th, killing all on board, and what we absolutely need to know. The retrieved black box details the pilot's struggle with the plane, basically as soon as it took off. A fatal tug of war, it would seem, between man and machine, as the plane's nose was repeatedly forced down, apparently by an automatic system receiving incorrect sensor readings. Now, the pilots tried to correct this more than two dozen times in the 11-minute flight, extraordinary, before it crashed into the Java Sea. The plane is part of a new line of Boeing jets, a 737 MAX. Malindo Air, it's a subsidiary of Lion Air, was the first airline to fly the planes last year. Indonesian aviation authorities are investigating the fatal crash, so is Boeing. There's a lot in this story. Did Boeing adequately explain the new modifications in the 737 MAX model? Were the pilots thoroughly trained to deal with crisis? What of Lion Air's overall attitude to safety? Stories about its planes colliding with a cow, a pig and each other are surfacing, two more since this dreadful crash, amidst quite consistent tales about cavalier safety attitudes and poor pilot training during its short but explosively fast-growing life. And then there's Indonesian politics too. To talk us through these issues, Neil Hansford's rejoining us. He's chair of a firm called Strategic Aviation Solutions. And Captain Mike Michaelis, who's a 737 captain. He chairs the Allied Pilots Association's National Safety Committee, and he joins us from Fort Worth in Texas. Welcome to you both.
Yeah, good morning.
Mike,
good morning, Geraldine.
I understand you flew the delivery flight of American Airlines' first 737 MAX. I mean, how did you find it?
Absolutely. I did fly the delivery flight for American Airlines. The aircraft itself, at that time, and we had received basic information on the differences in the training that we were going to have to implement in order to fly the aircraft. The airplane flew as advertised, exactly the way we expected it to fly, and the transition was relatively easy. At that juncture, and in fact until Lion Air, none of us, no pilots up here in the United States anyway, and I'm sure across the world, knew of this MCAS system. So this was a surprise to us.
So what's the MCAS system?
The MCAS system stands for, let me find the exact nomenclature for you so I don't mess it up, Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System. And what that does is do the high angle of attack and the aerodynamics of the aircraft, because of the change in the design, Boeing decided that they needed to have a system to go off and make the flight envelope be linear throughout its angle of attack, from normal angle of attack to high angle of attack. So you had similar control forces. And in this case, they put in a system that operated only under manual control. And if the angle of attack were red, either because you put the aircraft into a high angle of attack situation, or the system said, hey, the angle of attack is saying it is this, then this MCAS system would introduce nose-down trim.
And the worry, just for people like me, is that if you go, is it correct, if you go up too high too fast, you have a risk of stalling?
That's correct. Mm. But once again, I mean, for almost every single flight that we fly, getting up to that level of angle of attack is relatively low.
So what was the problem that the pilots on Flight 610 encountered?
Well, let me caveat what I'm going to say with one thing. This is really early in an accident investigation and trying to draw conclusions based on the fact that they don't even have the cockpit voice recorder up yet. I'm hesitant to say anything other than what we know from the DFDR, the Digital Flight Data Recorder, which tells us what the aircraft did. But in this case, you could see off the Digital Flight Data Recorder that they were fighting the system, and they may or may not have realized exactly what this thing was doing. And that's the last thing you want a pilot doing is asking the question, what's it doing to me now? Because it's being drawn on by a system that they know they have no knowledge of.
So the procedure they used was the one that, to correct the problem, was used in the older style 737 planes. I mean, we've all flown in 737 planes sort of thing.
That's correct.
But so I'm going to ask you next a related question. Boeing, a week after the crash, put out an advisory about the new system not working as the old system, where you actually manually tugged back on it or something like that anyway.
Yes, ma'am. And that's a little bit disingenuous, what Boeing said. Here's the thing. In most of the trim situations that we have, you can operate the yoke or the control column in an opposite direction, and that will engage a brake. And that's not true with all of the trim systems, but the trim systems are counteractive. In this case, they physically programmed the system to disregard that yoke brake. And it only operates when one is manually flying the aircraft, i.e. the autopilot is not engaged or the flaps are not in the up position.
Right.
So this is a system that has an effect on a pilot that if he doesn't know that system is there and will continually drive the nose down, he puts himself automatically into a situation of what is it doing now and how can I fix the problem? So that was unfortunate that Boeing decided to make that decision to not inform the actual operators, those who operate the controls of the aircraft, and inform them of that system.
Well, Neil, I must say this does sound rather remarkable. Is Lion Air the only airline that has had troubles thus far?
It's the only one that's been heavily reported because they had a major loss of life. But I have to say that the transparency of the investigators in Indonesia has been uncharacteristic for Indonesia, and they have been very, very open. They've been very clear from the information available. I can't say the same for Boeing, because in the end, Boeing's all about protect the brand and protect the share price, which has had a belting, and at least our good captain has had the advantage of a brief to their union of from Boeing in recent times about the implications. But it is very worrying. But your endemic problem is, here is an airline that in 2000 didn't exist. In 2018 is flying over 300 aircraft with 500 on order. They were the biggest customer of the 737-900. Here is a fairly new, inexperienced airline taking early deliveries of the MAX 8, and the safety culture doesn't come in bottles. It takes generations of an airline to develop the right culture to take on something as different as this system, which exists in Airbuses for some time, but it was new to Boeing.
I see. So it already does exist in other forms. I mean, what's been your reading, Neil, of the chatter around the aviation world in the wake of this? I mean, Boeing has got a lot at stake here, and we take possession, do we not? Virgin Australia takes possession of 32 of these planes next year.
Yeah, Geraldine, you can't compare a 737 MAX 8 in the hands of Virgin Australia or American Airlines or Qantas or any of the mature, well-regulated organisations, as against an aircraft in the hands of a regulatory body and new airlines in a market like Indonesia. So as far as Australia is concerned, or the United States is concerned, it isn't a problem because of the experience of the pilots. Because the pilots in Lion Air, this fellow, regrettably, was an Indian, and it's almost like a United Nations, is that it takes you a long experience road to be able to fly for an American Airlines or a Qantas or a Virgin. You can't say the same for these new startup low-cost carriers in Asia.
Now, do you know this? Because, I mean, this is where it gets extremely tricky and delicate, and obviously the whole conversation is sort of suffused with this issue about whether people are allowed to come in, you know, whether they're brought in with sufficient training, whether there are certain ethnicities who are given an inside track. I mean, it's what do you know about the training available to, say, Lion Air pilots versus those to even, say, Garuda or Singapore Airlines nearby?
I don't think, again, you can compare Garuda under the same regulator as you can Lion Air, because Garuda is a very very old airline that was basically came out of KLM, and so it inherited some of the safety culture.
But do you remember it had a lot of issues, and the tragic loss of Morgan Mellish, the former Financial Review writer, and lady called O'Neill, who worked for the embassy. That was one of the ones. After that, they seemed to turn themselves around. It was a sort of a crisis that produced a real change in Indonesia, and this is like going back to the old days.
Yes, but what effectively made them knuckle under is the United States wouldn't allow them to an Indonesian flagged aircraft to fly to the United States, and Europe applied the same bans, and the regulator had to bring his game up. And there is a nonsense in this, in that there is an audit procedure that Lion Air allegedly went through in the last 12 months and passed an international audit with all of the things that are coming out now about falsification of documents. And I've seen the engineers' documents, and there's a real tragedy in this. Is the pilot who managed to get the aircraft home coming up from Bali
the day before
had an extensive briefing from the engineer who'd taken the relevant black box out, and he knew he had a problem. This poor guy who's taken this one out, he had no briefing, and when I look at the documentation, there was nothing to tell him that he was being given a very questionable aircraft, which, if it had been in the United States or Australia, would have been stopped from flying three sectors ago. But in Indonesia, with the culture and the saving face, we have to operate. We've got, it's a case of fly at all costs, and that just doesn't exist in mature aviation environments, because Captain Mike would have said, I'm not taking it. I'm not happy. I'm not taking it. I'm snagging it. We're not going.
I'm going to ask Captain Mike, how do you hear this?
Well, I absolutely agree, and Sir Hansford is absolutely right. One of the things that is most telling in the interim report is the fact that they come down towards the end of the report and talk about we need to increase our reporting to our chief pilot so the chief pilot can make these issues known, and that whole process. In the United States and Australia, I don't need the chief pilot to write up the airplane for me. I write the airplane up, and I can ground the airplane by myself. So this process that happens primarily in the Middle East or the Far East area, where we have that issue of saving face, tends to
There's a hierarchy involved. You say there's a hierarchy involved in some of these parts of the world that doesn't exist in other parts of the world.
Absolutely, ma'am. Mm. And the safety culture, what Sir Hansford was talking about, that safety culture, which had been built in Qantas, in Australia, all of the Australian airlines, Virgin, and in the United States, where we believe in one level of safety, applies across the board. So American expects to operate as safely as Delta. We operate under the same rules, and we set that standard. That is not necessarily the case as you look across the world at different airlines.
Well, so, Neil, is there an established procedure in place, for instance, when an airline takes on new models, like Virgin taking possession of these new Boeing 737 MAXs next year? Are airline engineers involved in an early process with Boeing and then a briefing of the pilots and so on?
Well, if it's coming into an airline like an American or a Qantas, there is a working group who prepare the differences in the flight manuals and the flight procedures, and they do a differences course for the operating pilots. So they are given a differences course. The engineers are sent away. Now, what I can't get a straight answer out of Boeing, and I don't know whether Mike has. There is always when a new aircraft goes in, there is a customer representative from Boeing, an engineering representative, who is overseeing the performance of the aircraft in its early days and in its fleet. I can find no reference, no matter how much I lead to them, that Boeing are admitting that they had a technical representative on site who should have been overseeing this, because when it was first grounded, we've had situations in Australia going back to the Fokker 50. ANSET grounded it immediately, and there was a hotline running between the Fokker representatives in Amsterdam and their representatives in Australia and the ANSET people, this doesn't appear to be happening. So the Boeing performance in this appears to be highly irregular of an airline manufacturer introducing a new type to a country. And, you know, I'd be interested in Mike's comment on that.
Just quickly to you, Mike.
I would agree with that. Here's what we've found out since this accident, is that Boeing made a conscious decision not to tell the pilots about this system. They call it a control law. Now, it does exist in some versions of the Airbus, different models. It depends. But for Boeing to have put that into a system that operates only when you are under manual flight and not tell the pilots about it is a departure from where they have typically operated. To boot, on the flight crew operations manual, they only had the definition, i.e. the acronym MCAS. That's the only place you see that in the flight crew operation manual. And that is the manual that Boeing gives to the airline for them to make their own specific changes. You know, they take that and hone it to their airline based on the things that they want to emphasize. So there was no indication of the MCAS other than that acronym, which is terrible bad. Now, since the accident, Boeing has been forthcoming with information, but it's kind of because they had to.
Okay, that I find that's extraordinary to hear, I must say. Look, I really want to thank you both, Captain Mike Michaelis and Neil Hansford. Thank you very much for your time.
It's always a pleasure. If it means that Australians travel safely and select their airlines judiciously, so we're not exposing our nationals to unsafe environments.
Oh, precisely. And, you know, there's a great quote here. Everything that's bad about Indonesia you can see in line, says Alvin Lee. This is in the New York Times, Indonesia's official ombudsman and ex-aviation expert. So, I mean, I think before the end of the year, we'll go to the politics of Indonesia, because this man who has set it up, Rusdi Kirana, successfully lobbied to be Indonesia's ambassador to Malaysia at the end of last year too. So I think there's a lot involved in this that we have yet to find out. Thank you both very much indeed.
Well, Geraldine, thank you so much for inviting us from up here in the States. We'd like to just add into the comment, and I know the Australian pilots feel the same way we do. We are the last line of defense to protect our passengers, and we're there for you.